Welcome back to Hoops HD, everybody. This is our Final Four edition podcast, I guess we would call it. I'm your host up here in the top center, Chad Sherwood.
Joined by Great job, Chad. We don't even know what we're calling it. We're off to a fantastic start yet again.
How do we mute him again? Joined by up top here, David Griggs and John Stalica. In the second row, we've got on one side John Titel and the other Joby Fortson. In the center square there from Racketeer.org, we have Rocco Miller and a very special guest down there on the bottom row. Mr. Titel, I'm going to let you introduce our guest for this evening, though, because you brought him on, a friend of yours, I believe, from way back, if I understand.
You understand correctly. My longtime friend, Jamal Murphy, we used to write together for a different college basketball website. I was thrilled to run into him at the Sweet 16 and Elite 8 in D.C. this weekend. He knows bracketology. He knows Big East basketball. He works with the esteemed Bill Roden. Jamal, can you tell us a little bit about your basketball knowledge and your work?
Thanks, guys, for having me. Like you said, Jamal Murphy. I currently co-host or executive produce and co-host the Bill Roden on Sports podcast with the legendary sports writer Bill Roden, formerly of the New York Times, now with The Undefeated at ESPN. I also contribute to CBS Sports Local. You know, my Twitter is at Blacketologist because I'm the only black bracketologist that I know, you know, that I've seen. You know, so basically I'm a college basketball nerd. You know, that's about it. I've been watching the tournament like you guys, and was at the Sweet 16 and Final Eight where Michigan State upended Duke in probably the biggest game of the weekend.
Yeah, and as we recently learned, a really good friend of Jerry Palm.
What's up, Jerry?
I gotta ask you, Jamal, you know a lot of Big East. How shocked are you that we're sitting here in April and DePaul is playing basketball?
Yeah, that was a plus for the Big East this year, I have to say. Only they got four teams in. They snuck a couple of those in. They didn't have any after the first weekend left. No Big East teams left after the first weekend. So the fact that DePaul is playing, that's might be the highlight of the Big East season. Unbelievably.
Yeah, I mean, I tweeted out earlier today. I am just like, it's mind blowing that I'm in April and DePaul is playing.
It's great. I think they were they 9-9 this year or close to it, something like that in the Big East.
Something like
7-11 maybe.
Yeah, like their record was posted as 18-15, so I'm assuming they entered this tournament 15-15. I don't know what that made them in the Big East, but I don't know what they were. I think it was about 9-9.
Yeah, they were close to 500. They were in the mix.
They were 9-9. Yeah.
Right.
Well, Jamal, you and Titel were both at the East Regionals in D.C., so I want to do is start by pulling up on the screen here if this works, and, you know, sometimes these things work, sometimes it's a complete disaster, so we cross our fingers, but pulling up a portion of the bracket that has that East Regional in it, hopefully we can all see it there. Where
sometimes we get pictures of San Antonio. Oh,
nice. Yeah, who knows, we'll get pictures of it sometimes with the show, but it looks like we have the Michigan State-Duke bracket there with before that Michigan State over LSU and Duke over Va Tech. Titel, let me start with you here because you were covering this region as well. You know, what was your takeaway from these three games this past weekend?
So I'll handle the two Sweet 16 games, then you can go to Jamal for the Elite Eight if you'd like.
That's good.
The opener, LSU Michigan State, was kind of a blowout. I mean, it was a blowout. LSU hung in there for a half, and then just it showed in the second half that the Spartans were the better team, more physical, destroyed them in the paint. It was kind of a mismatch. And as much as LSU is a good team and young, like when you bring in an assistant coach to face off against the great Tom Izzo in March, that's what's going to happen. That's what happened. As far as the All-ACC battle, it was really exciting. So many Hokies fans in attendance. They were loud. They were present. And they really thought they had a chance. And they did. We saw in the UCF game where UCF had two chances to beat Duke at the end. Didn't work. Virginia Tech, if possible, had an even better chance. Ahmed Hill did the spin move in the final second. Perfect inbound pass. He's at the rim. And he missed the shot, which would have been an even more enormous upset than Michigan State's upset of Duke in the Elite Eight. But a very uncompetitive game. The opener in the nightcap was as good a Sweet 16 game as you'll ever see, I think.
Yeah, and as proof that you were really there. You see, that there it is, right?
Yeah.
That is not home base. That was actually waiting for me. I sat second row, a little to the right of Jim Nantz and right behind John Thompson. It was one of the highlights of my life. It was great.
Oh, yeah, what's hilarious about that is that it's not doctored, and it looks a lot more doctored than a lot of doctored.
Jamal, let me head to you, though, for the Duke-Michigan State game, which was the fourth of four incredible games we had on Saturday and Sunday, and you were there.
Right. No, yeah, another great game. I think all the Elite Eight games were great games, and this was no exception. Michigan State, Duke, it was the matchup that everyone pretty much wanted or expected in the East region, and it lived up to it. I think most people thought pretty much it was a toss-up. It was going to be a toss-up game going into it, and I think most people had Duke squeezing it out, probably because they have maybe the most talent in the nation, and also people probably just wanted to keep seeing Zion and RJ Barrett play into the Final Four, but it was really it turned out to be the game everybody expected, a grinded out game. Michigan State slowed it down, made it a game about toughness, which everyone pretty much expected. Duke made a couple runs, but they just couldn't consistently take care of business on the backboards. And also they turned it over 17 times, which I think was the key stat in the game, them turning the ball over 17 times. And Michigan State only turning it over 7 times. So despite the fact that Duke, outshot Michigan State, those turnovers kind of swayed it in Michigan State's direction. Zion Williamson, he showed up as expected, had a big game, maybe didn't have enough touches towards the end of the game. They kind of, RJ Barrett, as usual, as has been the case all season, kind of went on his own towards the end of the game and had mixed results and missed a foul shot at the end of the game. Michigan State squeaks it out on the end in dramatic fashion, getting the ball in bounds to Cassius Winston, who had a tremendous game, 20 points, 10 assists, one turnover. He was the star of the game, and everybody knows how great he is, but he still seems to be underrated. And he carried Michigan State to that 1-point victory. He gets the inbounds pass at the end, runs away from the defense. They can't foul him, and that was it. And Duke was, of course, devastated after the game. I don't think they really felt, they had won two close games, obviously, in the two games before that. I think they had that sort of entitlement, I think they really believed they were a team of destiny. That were going to pull out, these close games. And then when it hit them that they actually lost, you could tell they were just so, so devastated, almost to the point where they had never even envisioned losing. So it was pretty sober locker room for Duke at the end of the game. Despite the fact that Duke was in my Final Four, and I actually have no Final Four teams. I was incorrect on all Final Four teams.
As were most of us, but
despite that, it was a great game and a great game to be at.
Yeah, I got to say, Duke, I thought almost was hurt themselves by not committing enough fouls during the game, which is kind of backwards. Right. But
yeah.
I mean, had they been at 6 fouls already, they got at least 1 foul in there, but they need to get 5 more to even enforce.
Yeah,
you mentioned that you were in Duke's locker room, and there's a narrative for this Duke team that is going to be lost in history, and it kind of bugs me about that because it seems like the only thing that's indelible is what a team does in the tournament. Yeah, they didn't make the Final Four, but this was a Duke team that was 4-1 against teams that are in the Final Four, and 3 of those wins came away from home. When you look at what they did against some other teams that were either 1 seeds or in the Elite Eight, this was a historically successful season for Duke as far as what they did in the regular season. I don't even recall the last time a team was 4-1 against Final Four teams and beat 3 of them away from home, but I guarantee you it hasn't happened that often. And I think that's one of the narratives that's going to get lost in what really was a historically good season, even by Duke standards. You do bracketology. We all do. You don't often see a team that has that many wins against the top 2 lines.
Right. No, I agree. And like you said, during the regular season and during bracketology, they were clearly the number one overall seed, thanks to those type of wins, including two wins versus Virginia, who was probably the second overall team in the field.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, but you know, in today's day and age, the regular season doesn't matter. It's all, you know, it just strictly comes down to what you do in the postseason, what you do in the tournament. If you don't fulfill so-called expectations of, and really, right, the, you know, the expectations of everyone else, right? They're, yeah, our expectations. We just, you know, the outside, the media, the fans, we decide how good we think you should be. And if we're wrong, it's the coach's fault. You know, it's the coach. It's the coach. You know, it's they didn't live up to our expectations. So you're right. They had a great season. The interesting thing, you know, especially talking to Zion, who, you know, just a tremendous kid, you know, very open with the media, even in a time like this where he was definitely heartbroken. You know, he sat there and talked to the media, gave his opinions, and he, you know, he calmed down after the game, and he basically was saying that, he said, you know, he felt they had a great season despite what happened here. He was able to, you know, talk about, you know, some of the team, you know, Michigan State being one of the best teams they played, but not necessarily the best team. He had mentioned that Gonzaga was up there, Texas Tech and Michigan State, he said, were the best defensive teams they played. But basically his overall thing was, you know, it was one loss in the tournament. They didn't play particularly well at the end. But, you know, for him personally, he wasn't going to let this ruin the entire season. And he felt like it was a tremendous season. He actually said it was a movie. He felt like the whole season was like a movie, lights, camera, action from the start. You know, for him and the Duke players, I think they were able to grasp that it's not all about the postseason, but unfortunately the rest of us probably, you know, won't grasp that.
Right. Well, Duke may not be in the Final Four here, but we do have an ACC team in the Final Four. And I want to bring in Joby here as our ACC guy and our Virginia guy. And you had a lot better weekend than Duke fans did.
Yes, I wish that Virginia could shoot at that basket all day long, because if his people remember their histrionics and what we talked about with KenPom is, what game did we show? It was the Louisville-Virginia game where Virginia won by one after trailing by four with 1 second left. The baseline travel, etc.
Oh, wow. That was, I just made the connection. That was the exact same basket.
Yes. Two of the most memorable shots in Virginia history go down at that basket at the Yum Center. And so needless to say, things are very good in our land, so to speak. And I guess I'll address the first two games real quick. Oregon, Virginia was an absolute grind out that looked like a Virginia game from 6 or 7 years ago, because none of the stars of Virginia, Hunter, Guy, Jerome hit a little bit, were hitting. So it was that grinded out against another team that was very good defensively. Oregon get all the credit, but they didn't have the offensive sets to do it. And Virginia just won out at the end. It was a better performance defensively than even the Oklahoma game, I'd argue. On the other side of the bracket, wow. The game that people are going to forget is maybe that Purdue-Tennessee game, which was outstanding, top-notch, overtime in itself. Ryan Klein is going to go down, hopefully, in Purdue lore for that game, as opposed to the missed second free throw the following game. Because he was unstoppable. He was actually the superior three-point shooter dead-eye than Carson Edwards. Everybody will remember Edwards because of the 42 points that then followed. But that Tennessee-Purdue game, you didn't know who was going to win. Even when Williams fouled out, you were in a situation. That's the thing is, Schofield steps up. Williams steps up. Everybody played at their high level, and that was one of maybe, you know, we could talk about the Elite Eight games, but in the Sweet 16, that was the best Sweet 16 game, I would strongly argue, the Purdue-Tennessee game, which I don't think it's spent. I don't think Purdue was spent going in. Both teams actually spent a lot in their prior ones. Virginia, who uses their bench very effectively, only had 11 minutes from their bench against Oregon just because of the matchup issues that Bennett saw. He said, I got to have what's happening out there. as a result, you thought, well, maybe both teams would be sluggish. That was not the case. I mean, wasn't definitely the case for Mr. Edwards and his 42 points. But Guy took a little bit to go into. He kept, but then hit four or five three-pointers in the second half, made it a great game. And I guess the bottom line is everybody's going to remember those final 5.7 seconds at the end. But to get to that point, I quote Thomas Jefferson, the founder of the University of Virginia. It's appropriate. I'm a great believer in luck, and I find the harder I try, the more of it I obtain. And that is kind of what happened here. It was lucky that Klein, you know, missed the second free throw. It was lucky that Jerome was fouled, as it turned out, with 5 seconds. It was even luckier still that Jerome didn't intentionally miss that free throw. But he missed it, kind of short-armed it so bad that Diakite could knock it to the backcourt. It is, of course, lucky that Clark could throw a three-quarters pass to Diakite and that Harms chose to guard Jack Salt, who does not have very good offensive skill set, and let Diakite open, even if it was for a tougher shot, and Diakite recognizing the moment and positioning himself to shoot before he caught the ball in order to be able to release it within the time. Because if he takes a normal shooting stroke, there's a good chance time expires. And yeah. Then the final piece is, how many times have you seen a team make a miraculous play to go to overtime, and that was what they spent? Virginia then comes in, gets the help from DeAndre Hunter that they kind of had been waiting for all game, and the rest is history. An amazing game for the Cavaliers, obviously. And while Titel was at Washington, D.C., I wish I could get the press pass, but I will be paying a lot of money instead to go to Minneapolis. So my first Final Four since I was a kid in Dallas, Texas.
Well, you can bring a print out of the card, and maybe they'll let you sit up front.
Right. Yeah, a couple things about
I'm so happy we had the Saturday game as a personal note, because the tickets I purchased off StubHub are now $300 more expensive than when I purchased Saturday.
Joby talks about 5.7 seconds. What he's not even mentioning is that there was actually a clock review with 59.7 seconds remaining in regulation, where they actually
3 seconds were added on. That's a very good point.
Yeah.
It went to an even minute. That is a very good point, John.
Yeah.
It's lucky that Edwards, you know, that Bennett figured out that Edwards finally missed, to be honest, too. And then that put Klein on the line. And it could have – the pass could have gone to Edwards. It went to Klein, who, while a dead-eye shooter, is only a 70% free-throw shooter, as opposed to Edwards, who was already perfect from the line, had recovered from the bad Tennessee free-throw shooting, and was not going to miss a free throw if he had been walking with his 85% free throw shooting.
Well, yeah, scored 52 points in a Sweet 16 game and won it. I think that's the most Virginia thing that Virginia has done all year long. Mm-hmm. And they were behind by two with 2.4 seconds to go with a freshman that was 65 feet away from the basket, and they won the game. Another very Virginia thing. to have happened. The one thing I wanted to say about, well, all the Sweet 16 and Elite Eights, but this one in particular, it felt like the NCAA tournament in terms of atmosphere in a way that I hadn't noticed it before. The last time I went to a Sweet 16 and Elite Eight game, I looked around and I'm like, there's a lot of suits here. A lot of the real fans aren't here. The schools are getting less and less tickets, which leaves fans to get them on the secondary market, and they're scattered all over in different sections. But this year, particularly the games in Louisville, it looked like it was a split arena for all three games, with half rooting for one side, half rooting for the other. And I'm kind of wondering how that happened.
The location produced very close drive. It's actually West Lafayette. Remember, Louisville has a bridge crossing to Indiana. And so you had a ton of Purdue people. Purdue actually had a huge advantage in that game. According to Bennett himself, he said it felt like a road game. Tennessee, you know, travels big. Virginia does travel, but Purdue.
Well, they were there. I mean, they were outnumbered, but they were there.
I mean, obviously, Oregon didn't have much of a presence.
Yeah. I want to bring Rocco in now, so we can swing over to the West region, where we saw Texas Tech knocking off Gonzaga in yet another thrilling game, boring, right? Just another great game in this in the Elite Eight. After Tech surprised Michigan, I thought. Very few people other than myself, honestly, picked Tech to win that game.
Yeah, it was tremendous. And first of all, welcome, Jamal. It's good to meet you on the show here. We've been following each other for a few years. Welcome aboard. Hope you'll join us again. And second of all, you know, this is an all-star cast we have tonight of bracketologists and hoops nerds, so it's just fun to be on this. But going back to Texas Tech, what an incredible tournament they've had. I mean, going into the tournament, let's just revisit what we were looking at before the tournament started. You had one of the most brutal draws. We're looking at Buffalo, a red hot team, a team first caliber mentality where they share the basketball. They don't care who gets the credit. Texas Tech blows them out of the water 2 weeks ago, and they end up doing the same thing here on Thursday night against Michigan. Michigan actually, I thought, had some pretty good open looks, but I think the Texas Tech suffocating defense just took the legs out of Michigan, because you started noticing in the second half all those shots falling short, a lot of three-pointers falling short, and then they were settling for threes late. So Texas Tech gets by both of those games way easier than I think almost anybody would have guessed. And they had fresh legs ready to go for a really tough test in Gonzaga. And I think they D'd up Gonzaga very well. The kind of shots that were going in for both teams for a while was just incredible. I was watching it with a large gathering, and everybody just kept looking at each other like, is anybody going to miss? And then as the game went on, you know, the guy who kept stepping up was Matt Mooney, which is another incredible story. He was playing for South Dakota in the Summit League last year. Lost a heartbreaker in the Summit League title game to South Dakota State right at the end. Now he's finally in the tournament with a great team and performing at the highest of levels here to get to the Final Four, making big shot, making tough reverse layups, finding his teammates in transition. And how about Tariq Owens, a guy Jamal probably knows pretty well, coming from St. John's, with two huge blocks down the stretch. He had that memorable block where he actually blocked a corner three by Rui Hachimura. Ends up saving the ball, even though his foot was out of bounds under review. They counted it, and he saved it back in. Just one of the more athletic plays we've seen in the entire NCAA tournament. This Texas Tech team, I mean, Culver's actually the best player on the team. He's probably the MVP, especially the Michigan game. They're very well balanced. They play organized defense. Coach Beard emerged, I mean, probably between Joby's Coach Bennett and Coach Beard, got to be the two of the best coaches in the game, of course.
And Tim Miles, don't forget him.
And Tim Miles, yes. It's an incredible story. I mean, I'm actually, coming into the weekend, I was a little bummed out because I thought we'd see a lot more chalk, and this was one of the more pleasant surprises. And of course, we saw more as the weekend went on. This was the first shoe to drop. So, incredible.
Yeah, I mean, really just the job that Chris Beard has done there. David, I know we've spoke about this a lot over the past 2 years, where last year this Texas Tech team wasn't picked to do anything. They make the great run in the tournament. Then they lose pretty much everybody, including a first-round draft pick, Zaire Smith. And now, you know, they're definitely not going to do anything this year. And here they are in the Final Four, even better year than last year.
Right. And again, it's just how many – I bet they – you know, last year Texas Tech started off unranked. I don't even think they received any votes in the preseason. If they did, it was minuscule. And they were top – they were in the top 10 for part of the year, ended up in the Elite Eight. This year, starting off unranked again in the Final Four, I bet that this is the last time that they start off unranked for a while. They've definitely proven it. And Chris Beard, when you look at what he's done, I mean, he's not getting like the reason they're starting off so poorly is because when you look at the roster at the beginning of the year, it's not the most highly recruited guys. And, you know, they're not the most storied program either. But this guy has won every year, everywhere he's been. Like, most people don't remember how good that team at Arkansas Little Rock was. Round of 32. Yeah. And they haven't really been good since, and Texas Tech really wasn't good before he got there.
And he was great at UNLV.
Yeah, he was phenomenal at UNLV. Now, he didn't win any games, but for 21 days, he was getting
– Didn't lose any games for 21 days either, did he now?
Yeah, I know. He didn't lose any games for – I mean, I think, in my opinion, he is the best coach that UNLV has had, probably since Jerry Tarkanian.
Hard to argue.
Yeah.
Well, they got TJ coming in next year, so we'll see about Vegas. But yeah. Let's head over to the Midwest region. Sleek, I haven't spoken to you yet. Let me bring you in here where Auburn is just the blue blood killer here suddenly this year. Kansas, North Carolina, Kentucky, what's next? What's left?
Yeah, after really escaping against New Mexico State.
Let's be honest. This was the Midwest region in name only this year when you considered Auburn and Kentucky on opposite sides and even North Carolina with somewhat of a presence in the Southeast. But what's good about Auburn is they showed they could win in a couple ways. Number one, they were able to get into a fast-paced game with North Carolina where they were shooting, I think it was 17 threes during the game. The only thing was they paid a heavy price in that game with Okiki tearing his ACL, and obviously he's going to be out for the remainder of the tournament.
Yeah, and Sleeka, that was the amazing thing was when with Okiki out, I thought they'd have any shot at all against Kentucky, and this team just rallied. They really were amazing against Kentucky, I thought.
Yeah, and this is where they were able to shift into a different gear because they were able to win a game that was a little more defensive-oriented, even with P.J. Washington having a double-double in his best game in the tournament with, I think it was 28 points, 13 rebounds. The Tigers, despite missing a shot that would have won the game in regulation, they were able to outlast Kentucky in the overtime period.
Yeah, and so now we are set with the Final Four, and I want to let's take a quick look.
One more quick thing about the Okiki. Like in that game in the Sweet 16, I was glued to the set, couldn't look away. I looked down at my phone to look at something, and I actually missed the Okiki injury, and your heart just sank for him, for his teammates, and everybody else. And in a brilliant moment of sideline reporting, they came on and announced that he had had a serious knee injury and would not be returning for the rest of the game. and maybe not for another year and a half on top.
I'll tell you, though, when he came out in the second half, he wasn't originally at the game against Kentucky. He came in the middle of the game. He came to the arena. They brought him out to the sideline.
We're all pretty sure that was orchestrated, right?
Yeah, even if it wasn't, though. but that's when the team just took it to another level, I thought. Rocco, didn't you see that then? Rocco? Hey,
Chad. Yeah. I couldn't believe it. Yeah, and, you know, after seeing Bruce Pearl's interview after the game, it looked like, and watching the game, I thought the game plan really – from the last 10 minutes on all the way through overtime was to just get the ball to either Jared Harper and Bryce Brown, run the offense through both of those guys. Jared Harper was amazing. He got fouled a bunch down the stretch. He finished 11 for 11 from the line, didn't miss a single free throw, and Bryce Brown's putting up 24. I mean, this was a veteran club that had all seniors and juniors going up against mostly freshmen. And Kentucky's one veteran, Reed Travis, from out here transferring from Stanford, this was his big chance. He actually got the ball late in that crazy scrum with a chance to win the game, and he passed it up. He was under the hoop, and he just passed it up without even looking.
That was an awful pass. He had the layup.
Yeah, all he had to do was turn around and lay it in. Yeah. And he was the senior on the team. So, you know, they really relied on P.J. Washington, a guy who they didn't even have in the first two games in the tournament. And he had a great game, don't get me wrong. But Kentucky also, a John Calipari staple, missed a tremendous amount of free throws, went 12 for 21. That will always kick you in the butt when you go to overtime.
Well, let's take a look at
John Calipari getting the lifetime contract extension. Imagine what they would have given him had he won.
It would have been afterlife contract as well.
It would have been remarkable.
Let's take a look at the national semifinals. And Jamal, let me bring you back in here with this Michigan State-Texas Tech game. First, actually, I think it's the later of the two games. Let's start there because on the left side of the screen, Michigan State versus Texas Tech. What are you looking for in that game?
Oh, I mean, you know, just a brutal defensive battle, physical. You know, you're looking at a game in the 60s. Both teams obviously play great defense. I think, you know, to me, it's going to come down to probably which star has the best game between Culver and Cassius Winston. And Cassius Winston is just so consistent. I mean, you pretty much know what you're going to get. You're probably going to get, you know, 18 to 20, and you're probably going to get 8 to 10 assists and few turnovers. So, to me, he's the key. And I think Michigan State probably scratches out the victory. I think maybe they have a little bit more firepower offensively, maybe. you know, but either way, it's gonna come down to the, you know, to the last couple of possessions, and I just you know, my pick will be Michigan State moving on.
Tytel, is that where you're going? You're going with this guy and his team?
It's hard to pick against Cassius. I mean, I'd seen some preview material where a lot of people compared him to Mateen Cleaves and the other great point guards in Michigan State recent history in terms of he doesn't come in as like a freshman and is immediately like a superstar like a Zion or an RJ. He sticks around for 3 to 4 years, and all he does is win games in March, and he's not going to be a high draft pick, but he might have a long NBA career, but he knows the system, and he's a coach for Izzo on the floor. It's so hard to pick against him that I can't. I mean, Texas Tech played Duke this year. They lost by double digits. Obviously, like, it was close, and it was neutral site, and it was earlier in the season. But Michigan State beat Duke, which I didn't think they could do, so I'm going to ride the hot hand.
Right. And Jamal, let me ask another question here, because, you know, these all the schools, we talk here about all these one-and-done schools, and for the second, I think, year in a row at least, we've got a Final Four full of veteran teams again. It's one-and-done doesn't seem to be the way to win a national championship, does it?
No, not really, but it'll get you on TV. It gets you some hype. Obviously, it'll get you a lifetime contract. You know, you get those one and done guys. But you're right. I mean, when it comes down to winning, and especially, you know, big games, it's always about experience. I mean, even the NBA is not, you know, NBA doesn't really want these one and dones yet. They'd love to, for these guys to stick around a year or two longer. So, you know, GMs don't make as many mistakes in the draft. So, you know, it's the basic thing. These guys still have to mature and get better, and the experienced team is usually going to win out. I mean, even those one and done teams, or the teams with a bunch of one and dones in the past that have been successful, like Kentucky with Anthony Davis, and then 2015 with Duke, they had, you know, a couple of veterans on each team that played key roles. So I think you need that, and Duke this year didn't have that. Kentucky probably did. With Reed Travis, like you mentioned before, but to me, Kentucky's freshmen were, you know, a level below what Duke had in terms of their freshmen. I think Kentucky's guys weren't as good as maybe Cal's classes in the past. So I really think Calipari did a great job getting them to the Elite Eight. Remember the first game of the year when they lost to Duke by 34 points. You know, I don't know if we would have said Kentucky, you know, would have been in the mix for the Final Four after that game. And he got them together slowly but surely during the season. And they were playing some pretty good basketball at the end. They couldn't get it done. But I think Calipari did a decent job with that team.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it'd be there's definitely some, I think maybe off-season discussions we can have here at some point over the summer about Coach K blasting the NCAA for the one-and-done, their lack of preparedness for the going away or the one-and-done rule and the like. But let's take a look at the actual games.
One quick stat that's probably important for this. 20 starters are in the NCAA Final Four.
Yep.
Two of them are freshmen. One was ranked 115th, Aaron Henry. The other only had an offer to Virginia from UC Davis and Kihei Clark.
I think I also heard that none of the top 100 are going to see any significant heading into the season are going to see any significant minutes of the Final Four. So,
It's on television. They can see that.
Joe, we let me go back to you. Then I was going to go to David, but now that he said that, Virginia Auburn, the other national semifinal here. What about this game?
Well, it's definitely the contrasting of styles. Yes, Kentucky can plays at a slower pace. They're not 352nd or 353rd in pace. Come on. It's going to be – and usually Virginia is successful at slowing teams down to their pace rather than speeding up. The question is how well – and I trust Bruce Pearl's ability to prepare. If Pearl presses from word go, that could change just a tad on the offensive end. I don't see anything speeding up Auburn on their offense being able to speed up the Virginia defense. But you could see the Virginia offense, because Auburn is so good at turnovers. I think they lead the country in points off turnovers. That's where the game will come down to whose style, when Virginia has the basketball, whose style is going to win out. If Virginia gets into that, as we've said on this show, the cliche – it's if they place Auburn in the dentist chair, then I don't see the Tigers winning. But if Auburn plays the way that, for instance, Syracuse did in the Elite Eight a few years ago when they sped Virginia up, and Auburn can do that for more than just the 10 minutes Syracuse did in that game, then Auburn doesn't just have a puncher's chance. They have a real chance, especially if Harper and Brown stay as hot as they've been the last few times, and yet another top-level scout could be coming for War Eagle.
Yeah, I mean, this we've is got a fascinating yeah, David, matchup. David, we have this matchup of the great defense of Virginia and the Auburn, yeah. almost the chaotic style that Auburn likes to play.
Yeah, and I mean, when it comes to just contrasting styles, this is – I mean, Michigan State-Texas Tech is going to be a great game, but, like, the X's and O's part of me is really, really looking forward to this, like, Virginia-Auburn game because, again, the two are so different. You kind of – I mean, obviously, whoever scores the most points is going to win. That's the obvious factor. I've done research. Nobody has ever lost a game when they scored more points than the other team. But well, no, that's not true. Some teams have had to vacate wins. But I mean, like what Joby said, just to build on it, it's utterly fascinating how contrasting these two teams are, and whoever gets control of the tempo of the game and the style of play is going to have the advantage. So I mean, right from the get go, I can't wait to. I'm actually looking forward to the first minute of the game just for that.
Well, I'll tell you what, we have the two semifinals. I'd like to run through everybody, each of you here, and give me your semifinal winners and your national champion real quick, and if you want any other comments about them as we run through these. But, Sleeker, let me start with you. Who's going to win the semifinals? Who's going to win the champion?
I think you have to go back to 1999, the last time I could recall a coach and a program making their debut in the Final Four and end up winning the whole thing, and that was UConn and Jim Calhoun. So I'll probably go with the more experienced coaching staff and Michigan State winning the whole thing. They'll probably end up facing Virginia in the title game, although Auburn is going to keep that one a very, very close game.
Okay. Joby, do you agree with him?
I actually would have Virginia. I mean, I'm sorry the bias comes out, but it's not really – you know me well enough that I haven't overly picked my team. I think Virginia will control the pace against Auburn and will make it to the Final Four. I agree with John on the experience factor. Tech might just be happy to be there. I know Chris Beard's great, but this is the first step. And then Virginia versus Michigan State. I actually like Virginia. There is a little bit of unfinished business from a few Sweet 16s that is very much on Bennett's mind, and we'll see. But I think Virginia can do it this time.
A few Sweet 16s, a few first-round losses, you know.
Yeah. Well, it would be an amazing story, to be very honest, if going from the UMBC loss. And it's a shame it's not Duke, because if it was Duke and Virginia had beaten Duke after being beaten twice, that is a movie script.
I may be stealing David's line here, but no, one seed has ever lost to a 16 and then ever lost a tournament game after that, ever.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Virginia's had the easiest path to the Final Four because they're the only team that didn't beat a one seed on the way there.
Right, but they got the Purdue game was a heck of a – was an incredible game. But, Rocco, how about you?
So, yeah, I agree with what you guys are saying in terms of the Michigan State-Texas Tech matchup. I think that's certainly going to be the better game on Saturday. You got to remember, we're going from arenas into a large football stadium, and this is going to be a defensive battle. I think Texas Tech, Michigan State, I mean, this has got a great finish written all over it. It certainly could – it's almost like a coin flip in my head. I'm so impressed with Coach Beard. I'm so impressed with the way they built this roster. And that it really doesn't have to be one guy they have to depend on to make the shot. I'm going to go on a limb and be the first guy to take Texas Tech to win that game. And then on the Virginia-Auburn side, I actually think Virginia is going to win it pretty comfortably, going back to that dome stadium philosophy. I think great defense can shut down a fast offense. Now, Auburn, of course, tons of NBA next-level talent, tons of – you know, they blew out my Huskies at the beginning of the year, right? So I know how good these guys are. But I just think Virginia is like a really bad matchup for Auburn, especially you take a Tony Bennett versus a Bruce Pearl. I'm going to take Tony Bennett every time in that coaching matchup. And then we got Virginia-Texas Tech for the final. I really think that could be an unbelievable game. I'll hedge my bets a little bit here, and I'll stick with Virginia to win it just because I do think they have a much better chance to be in that game.
I'll tell you, Rocco, Virginia, Texas Tech, what's the final score going to be, 38-35?
It could be. But, you know, the reason why Texas Tech's been playing so well is they've actually been scoring a lot in their four tournament games. Once they hit those scoring droughts, that's when they lose. Look at their five or six losses this year. In every one of those losses, they hit a big drought. They haven't done that yet in the tournament. So, again, that will be tough to avoid in the dome, in the football stadium. But something to monitor as we watch on Saturday.
And where did Virginia earlier this year set a school record for threes? In the Carrier Dome.
Yeah.
Pointing it out.
There you go.
All right. Let's see here. Tytel, let me go to you because I think I know where you're going, though. I think it's this again, right?
Uh-oh.
I'm definitely going Izzo over Chris Beard. No disrespect to Beard. He's arguably the National Coach of the Year this year. Wildly exceeding my expectations. But Izzo has been a coach for 25 years. He has been to more Final Fours in the past 25 years, vacated or otherwise, any other championship he won. So go Sparty. As far as the semifinal on the other side of the bracket, I told Joby last week I was not a believer in this Virginia team. Update, I am a believer in this Virginia team.
Stay off the bandwagon.
Certainly helps that Okiki's hurt because I think that he's going to be a huge X factor, although – I thought that would cost them against Kentucky, and boy, was I wrong for that. So I think also the fact that if there's anybody who's dying to beat Auburn, it's a guy named Braxton Key who's faced Auburn many, many times in the past. So I'm thinking he's going to have a little pep talk for the team. And then when you get to the title game, I mean, they're all coin flips, obviously, but it's been chalk so far, and I think that I'm a little nervous against picking against a Midwest team in a game in the Midwest, but it could not be a better story to lose to a 16, which we might never, ever, ever, ever see again because I didn't think it would ever, ever, ever happen. But I think Virginia is going to pull it out. The combination of offense and defense, the lesson they learned from that game, which has carried them throughout this entire season, and the fact that, like, they've already escaped. I mean, Michigan State, like, beating Duke took so much out of them. Not that beating all the teams that Virginia beat didn't, but, like, they believe in themselves now, and I think that it's hard to explain. The combination of offense and defense and coaching and everything else, which Michigan State also has, I really think Virginia can get it done.
So none of you are going to go where I'm going, which is that Auburn beats Texas Tech in the finals. I just and I don't have a real reason for it. It's just the way Auburn has been playing has been, I mean, probably since the beginning of March, it's just been unbelievable level. And I know that New Mexico State gave them a hell of a battle in the first round, but in the end of the day, they won the game, and that's what matters. And just the way they looked against Kansas, the way they looked against North Carolina, the way they're able to rally, I think they're going to keep doing it. I just have a feeling about this team. But Jamal, let me go to you for your picks, and then I'll go, David, I'll go to you after him.
Oh, okay, okay.
I think in terms of Michigan State, Texas Tech, like I said, I think Michigan State will squeak out a victory there, so that I have them in the final. Yeah, I think it'll be a great game. Two tough defensive teams. It's going to be like a, you know, kind of like a football game, I think. I don't think it'll be in the 50s, but I think it'll be in the mid-60s, and Michigan State pulls it out. On the other side, I'm going to go with Virginia. If there's any team I think that's going to be happy to be in the Final Four, I think it'll be Auburn. And maybe it's because their coach is such a happy-go-lucky guy. I don't know. I'm gonna lean towards the, you know, I tend to like the steely, no-nonsense coaches, which are the other three. So I'm gonna say Auburn will be bounced out of there, and it'll be Virginia and Michigan State. And originally, when I first thought about this, I thought I was gonna take Virginia, and maybe it's the story that I wanted to see. You know, like as everybody's mentioned. Losing to the 16 seed, comeback, winning the championship. When I look at that matchup, I just feel like Michigan State matches up very well with Virginia. I think they'll have the best player on the floor in Cassius Winston. I think they're on a mission. Izzo told a funny story after the Duke game saying that, you know, he went up to Cassius Winston's mother after the game and he was like, you know, smiling, like, how about that? We did it. And she was like, she was just no nonsense. Like, what do you mean? We got two more games to go. And he was like, oh, she kind of like got him back into focus. And he said, you know, he's going to, you know, so I think they'll be really focused in terms of trying to get this second national championship for Izzo. And like I said, I think they match up very well with Virginia in terms, you know, front line and at the guard spots. And I think Michigan State brings it home.
David.
Okay, starting off with this Auburn-Virginia game, I mean, you have this program that does great coach, great person, does things the right way, a program that does things the right way, and then you've got Tony Bennett up at Virginia on the other side. But anyway, I like what this Auburn team has done. It wouldn't surprise me if they beat Virginia. I mean, I've been surprised by them enough already to not write them off. But I'm not. But if I had to pick a winner, I'm going to go with Virginia. They've just been solid all throughout the tournament. They've been solid all year long. They've lost three games. Two were to Duke, who had uncharacteristically good shooting nights in both of those games, and the other one was to a Florida State team that was red hot. I know, like, Auburn's been on a roll as well. I mean, everybody, you don't get to the Final Four without being on a roll, but I just like Virginia a little better. Michigan State and Texas Tech, these are two, like, huge, like, trucks that are going full speed down a hill if you look at what they've done. I mean, they blew through the first three rounds of the tournament, and they both knocked off big-time heavyweights in the Elite Eight. Joby said this earlier about how rough Texas Tech's road's been, but, I mean, they blew out two really good teams, and then they beat a team that nobody thought that they were going to beat. This one could go either way. I'm going with Michigan State, but I'm going with them 51-49 percentage-wise. I mean, I'm not – it's not 80-20. It's not a guarantee. Even money in this game is the smart money, because this one really could go either way. And I picked Virginia to win it all back in October. I see no reason to change it. They're the only Final Four team I got right, so I got to stick with them.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and pull the screen down here. I think we should all be back up on the screen now. And just want to, Jamal, let me go over to you here. This is our first show that we've guest star on now. You've been a guest here on the show with us, and I got to ask you, what was it like being on a show with David Griggs? I've got to do it every week, and multiple times a week, and it's kind of rough for me. So
it was great. You know, I feel like I'm already more focused as a person.
Being able to just
completely ignore him, and just, you know, gather my own thoughts. I think it's helped me in the long run.
But on that note, I do want to thank everybody for having joined us tonight. There's going to be some great games coming up on Saturday, and then on Monday we're going to be back with a final wrap-up show for the entire season. I think we're recording that next Tuesday night after the championship. Yeah. We'll also at that point touch on the champions of the other tournaments like the CBI and the NIT, but we're kind of running late on time and nobody's watching them anyhow. Right. But on that note, I do want to, on behalf of Jamal Murphy, John Pytel, who just ran away, David Griggs, Rocco Miller, Joby Fortson, and John Slica.
Pytel just left.
He left. He's out of here.
An empty room. He left.
This has been Hoops HD, and we'll be back again next week. We'll talk to you again real soon.